Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Drunk women solving.
Is Drunk Women Solving Crime. My name's Katie Wilkins and I'm an author and comedian. I'm joined by screenwriter Hannah George.
Hello.
And writer-comedian Taylor Glenn.
Hello.
This is where brandy meets bludgeoning, mimosa meets misdemeanor, and port meets prostitution. It's a true crime podcast with a twist of lime. Coming up on Drunk Women Solving Crime.
I think I'd have drawn a massive cock and balls.
Of course you'd kill the Yankee. She probably meant to kill her first, but she was so hardy.
Have you done a poo today?
Taylor, what are bangs in America?
Fringe. They're fringe.
Well, why not say fringe?
Cheers! Cross Fern Britain.
Now it's time. Drunk Women Solving Crime.
Welcome to Drunk Women Solving Crime. We are recording this on lockdown day 1,073,000. And we are joined by the fantastic presenter and author, Fern Britton.
Yay! Holy shit.
You're very kind.
We're so excited.
Me too. I've never actually, you know, been able to do a legitimate broadcast wet. Pissed. Sorry, pissed. I'm already gone.
The other kind of wet.
Well, I need to. I don't think I had enough HRT this morning, but anyway, carry on. Yeah.
Well, without further ado, Fern, have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Yes. A very serious crime against magic.
Oh, what?
Yes. I mean, this is quite shocking. It is criminal. So a long time ago when I was doing This Morning, there were two magicians. They came on in separate incidents, but I shall tell them both.
Okay.
And first one was a man who came in saying that he was going to read our minds.
Okay.
And we met beforehand, you know, everyone arrives in the green room and has a croissant, a cup of tea, and then you trot into makeup. And then I was sitting in my dressing room just getting ready, really, and he knocked on my door and I said, oh, come in. And in he came, very famous magician. I cannot tell you his name. But he came in and he said, oh, look, I tell you what, can I just set something up for the programme? Because what I'm going to do is mind read you. Oh, fantastic. I mean, it was at the time when I was easily fooled and believed everything. Nowadays, anyway, so I said, yeah, of course. And he said, okay, what I want you to do is draw just a very simple little drawing and then send it to my brain and I will pick it up and I will reproduce that drawing on air to show that I did it. I said, okay. Ooh. He said, what I want you to do, have you got pencil and paper? I said, no. And he said, oh, here you are. I've got a pad of paper here. So he gave me his pad of paper and I started to draw. And he said, I just want it very simple. And he was already at the other side of the room, turned, not facing me, nowhere near mirrors or reflections. And he stood holding his head with his eyes closed. And he said, just draw something very, very simple, very simple. And send it to me. I think I'm getting something. Yes, I think I'm just send it a bit more strongly. And I'm sitting there going, oh, yes, this is great, isn't it? Yeah. And I drew, you know, what would you draw? I think it was like a daisy or a house, like a child would draw, you know. And then he said, now, I'm not going to look at that piece of paper. What I want you to do now is fold it in four. Put it somewhere safe. So I put it down my bra. Very safe. Very
classic.
Safe. Yeah, of course. And next to the lipstick and the phone and all of those things. As we do, don't we? Anyway, he said, okay, and I'm not looking. And I said, no, he wasn't looking. He really was on the other side of the room and not looking at anything. And then he went to leave and he went, oh, can I just have my pad of paper back? I said, oh, yes. I gave him his paper. And then off he went. And then 2 seconds later, there was a hammering on my dressing room door and the makeup lady came and she went, has he been here? And I said, what do you mean? Mr. X. And she said, yes, has he been in? I said, oh, yes. You haven't drawn on his pad, have you? I said, yes. She said, carbon paper.
Oh, that's what he did.
Oh. And so an hour and a half later, when his slot was on the programme, and Philip had drawn him a thing as well, and Philip and I were both sitting there so angry to have been duped in this manner. And so this guy's going, okay, now, you know, beforehand set up, you did a drawing, blah, blah, blah. Okay, now I'm going to get my pen and paper and I'm going to draw what I think you sent me. And he drew the picture I sent him. And he said, now let's see yours. And I pulled it out of my bra and I went, yeah. And he went, that's mind reading. And I went, yeah. Yes. Well, how amazing. Thank you very much.
For the podcast listeners, Fern's literally gritted her teeth
yes,
at this moment.
She did. I mean, that is criminal, isn't it? But worse than that, yeah. Another one came on. Yeah. The one I just told you about is an A-lister. The next one who came on was a C-lister.
Nice.
And he came on.
Love a bit of C-list magic.
Oh, so, you know, guests would arrive and leave during a commercial break. So this guy arrived in the commercial break and he sat down and we all went, hi, how are you? And, you know, all your new series looks good and what time's it on and all that stuff. And then just as the music was starting to take us back to the studio, he suddenly leant forward and he said, oh, Philip, lend me your watch. So this is going to be exciting. So Philip took his watch off and gave it to him. And we did the interview and it was long enough for us to have forgotten about the watch. Yeah. And then we said, goodbye and thank you so much and good luck, it's on tonight, 9 o'clock, whatever he was doing. And then he went, oh, hang on, put his hand in his pocket, took the watch out, gave it to Philip and said, I believe this is your watch.
Oh my God.
And he was so lucky that we all went, oh, amazing, how incredible. And then a year later, another magician came on the show and I was telling him about this charlatan who'd done this trick with the watch. And he said, that was me.
Oh, my God, amazing.
But anyway, these men need to be held in front of a court. Wouldn't be a jury in the land who wouldn't send them down.
No, they are con men.
Criminals.
You guys do know that magic isn't real. I mean, like...
Well, yes, but you want it to appear magic, don't you? Not just, oh, bloody hell, I could have done that myself.
Yeah, there are cooler ways. Supposed to feel magical, not like you've been ripped off.
No, yes. I want something
carbon
that
carbon paper is lame. That is lame.
Lame and lazy.
And like also, like that watch thing especially, it made it sound like he'd somehow managed to steal it, but actually he'd literally been given it off camera.
When I was very young, I don't know if people do this anymore, but they used to, you know, take people's braces off and their trousers would suddenly fall down and all of those things. I mean, now that is clever. Although presumably the man who'd had the braces taken off was actually a stooge. But hey, that's fine. It looked good.
Nobody was harmed.
Nobody was harmed. We were harmed. I am carrying this.
The American here forgot what braces meant for a second.
I was like,
they took off their braces. Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. No, not the braces.
Yeah, they were orthodontists gone wrong.
I'm with you.
Trouser suspenders. Is that what it is?
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way,
a bit of culture.
Bangs?
Just adding now, a bit of culture.
Taylor, what are bangs in America?
Fringe. Oh, no, we say bangs.
Yeah, but what are they?
They're fringe.
Well, why not say fringe? I mean, she arrived with her hair in bangs. You think, what? What the hell has happened?
Fern, we love guns.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And that's another thing. That's another thing. Yeah.
Well, I did not expect this to get political so soon.
Who would have thought that the magic stories would turn into a little gun control joke? I am as appalled as I can imagine you are. Do you know what's horrible about it? It's just they were both relying on you to be nice and to do
yes.
good television and play along when you were,
yeah.
must have been so, like, the things that you'd want to say.
Yeah.
Well, we'd like to hear those probably, Katie, wouldn't we?
Well, we were furious. But, I mean, they just put all their money on black and hoped. And we
yeah.
fell for it, suckers. Cross with ourselves, let alone the guys.
Mm.
Oh, did I?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Don't give me any of that. Oh, I've moved the Empire State Building. No, you haven't. You used carbon paper,
yeah.
assholes.
And then you told everyone to pretend they didn't know you had carbon paper.
I mean, obviously it has to be big for this Empire State Building, but, you know.
There's a lot of carbon paper, but still.
Yes. Outrageous. Really deeply, deeply pissed us off, I tell you that.
Yeah.
I think I'd have drawn a massive cock and balls. That's what I'd have done to really
fucked with him because he'd have to try and draw it.
Or I'll just draw them on his face.
Well, you know what? You've kind of answered this. We always get people to say, what would you say? If you had the perp in the room now, you can say anything you want. There's nothing they can do. What would you say to them? Or do to them?
No, I would just look at them very calmly. I'd have both of them in front of my desk and I'd say to them, you have thoroughly disappointed me, the public, and yourselves.
That's the most damning one we've ever had.
That is brutal. That is brilliant.
I feel ashamed and I haven't even done anything.
Yeah.
That's a great skill you have, yeah. Fern.
They are going to be so ashamed. And so they should be.
Yeah.
Cheers to that.
Cheers to that, guys.
Cheers.
Cross Fern Britain.
Now it's time for drunk women solving crime.
So now we move on to the portion of the podcast where we are going to discuss a true crime. Now, this is a serious crime that happens to a wealthy family. So first question, where do we think this is?
My mind automatically went to the US.
Okay.
Well, it's either the White House or Buckingham Palace.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. How wealthy are these people if we're talking super wealthy?
That's a good question.
Okay.
It could be Monaco because they've got they've got a royal family. So it could
be. They do, yeah.
Yeah, are they like Darren Brown wealthy? Or like Succession wealthy.
So your guess is, just to recap, America, Buckingham Palace or the White House, and then Monaco. None of you are correct.
Yes.
Now, Buckingham Palace is the closest, but it's still very far away. We are in Croydon.
Okay.
Oh, the wealthy families of Croydon.
I might have to take some notes here. In that case, I bet you it's Kate Moss.
Nice guess. Yeah, do not judge Croydon, guys. But it is not Kate Moss. So I'm going to tell you about the first death. There are multiple deaths. I don't want to give too much away, but this case contains drama. Right, the first thing. One, Edmund Duff is his name. Like Duff Man, if that helps you remember, because there's going to be a few names.
Oh, I'm going to write it down. Hang on.
I think she's only the second guest to take notes. Jenny Eclair was the first, and I've been disappointed in everybody since because nobody ever takes notes, so this is great.
So Edmund Duff
is the first victim. He returns from a fishing trip to his wife Grace,
Ooh. In Croydon. He seems fine and in good health, but later that night, as he's going to bed, he starts to feel very sick. His Ooh. Wife described him as looking green, and he Ooh. Described his own symptoms as being similar to being inoculated for bubonic plague in India. So question, what year is this?
Do we know our plagues? I pretty much only know... I know stuff about COVID-19. That is about it. That's loads about that.
Bubonic plague. And he was inoculated for something.
He was inoculated, and it was because he had to go to India.
When did the plague have a resurgence? I reckon it wasn't the first plague, but that...
Also, bubonic plague.
The comeback. Bubonic 2.
Is the different to previous plagues. Like, also... I don't want to give you too many clues, but inoculations...
Relatively new,
like not that new, but still comparatively.
Would this 1898.
I was going to say like 1914 or something.
So we have 1898, we have 1914, Hannah George.
I'm going to go 1712 because I don't know anything about anything,
In
really.
In that case, Fern is the closest.
Yes. Well done.
The year now is 1928, but he had his inoculation several years before. So it could
In
have
17...
been... It could have been 19... it could have been 1914, but yeah. So, well
done.
Those
were some great inoculations. He's 300 years old.
Honestly. And well done to any inoculation buffs at home that also guessed that correctly. So, he starts being sick, and the next day he's not any better. He doesn't want to kiss the baby. Good instincts, I think, there. They have three kids. because, you know, you don't want to pass the bubonic plague symptoms to the baby.
I'm just picturing him trying, but then, like, retching, like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Babies are always less attractive with boils on their faces, aren't they?
It's true. Yeah. It's true. It really ruins their...
Well, H.R. Geiger baby. It's a niche joke, but at least five people will enjoy it, so it's good.
By 3 p.m. the next day, he's complaining of pain in his feet and saying that he can't get warm. So a doctor is called. Question, what does the doctor say is happening?
You got
he says,
cold
you're
feet,
a
mate.
Whiny bitch. Kiss your damn baby and get on with your day. Is that right?
That is not correct. And I didn't hear what Fern said. What did you say, Fern?
Oh, I think he just said, you've got cold feet. Get some socks.
He prescribed socks. Very good. Hannah Jordan.
That is like the your mum, isn't it? When you say to your mum, like when I was a kid, it was always just take two paracetamol, no matter what it was. It's like, mum, I've broken my leg. Two paracetamol. Could be.
I always had an extra one. If ever I said to my mum, I've got a stomach ache, she'd always say, have you done a poo today?
I've done seven. I'm really ill, mum.
I always said to my children when they came with, you know, spurious symptoms, and I'd go, I'd listen very carefully and then go, we'll keep an eye on that.
Yes!
And, you know, magically, because they thought, thank God, someone's paying attention.
Yeah.
It went. In 10 minutes, it was gone.
They just want to feel listened to.
Yes. Yeah.
Just a bid for attention. That's all it is. And that's basically kind of what this doctor thought too. So Taylor wasn't very far off. But
Ooh,
the doctor,
so he was dismissive of his
He was
his
dismissive.
Symptoms.
He poo-pooed it. He puts it down to a liver complaint and he prescribes a flask of whiskey.
I miss the days where a liver complaint warranted
like the
a little
exact
bit of booze.
Thing that's killing it. It's like, you've broken your toe, let me fix it with a hammer.
That's amazing.
I had a liver problem during pregnancy, which made me chronically itchy. It was a nightmare. Like, I had to scratch myself with a tangle teaser and I couldn't sleep. Like, it was ridiculous. But I wish somebody had said, like, just have a bit of whiskey.
Yeah.
I really wish that had been the advice. Like, okay.
We need these 1928 doctors to make a resurgence. So question, does the whiskey do the trick?
If the trick is to kill him, then yes, it did do the trick.
It does not make him better. Later that night, he could no longer speak.
A husband that can't speak. Sorry.
Have some more whiskey, darling.
I know. And because he's Edmund Duff, all I can picture is Duff man, can't breathe.
Yeah, come on, Mr. Duff. So he can't speak.
Yeah, he can't speak. The doctor comes back and tries to administer some tea this time, which is a bit of a step down. He's got excruciating stomach pains.
I just like, also it just feels like medicine is like IT now. It's like, try turning it off again. Have you tried whiskey? Yeah. Have you tried tea? Have you tried whiskey again? Like, it's just nonsense.
It is.
So he dies in agony of excruciating stomach pain that night. Now, this death was initially recorded as natural. However, something happened that made everyone have to reconsider this verdict. Question, what happened?
Did he just need a big poo? Yeah. Katie's mum was right.
If only my mum was there to ask him in very loudly in public if he needed a poo.
Well, it's not some just an extreme form of man flu, is it?
No, definitely. It's a genuine, and it's a proper trigger as to why you would reconsider his death.
I love it if you could get inoculated for man flu. That would be great.
Oh, that would kill so many marriage issues, perhaps.
I feel like the only thing that's going to make them question is if somebody else dies.
Ding, ding,
similar
ding.
Similar symptoms.
Yes. You are correct, Taylor Glenn.
Well done, Taylor Glenn.
I'm second naming everybody in this episode. So, yes. So basically, there were more deaths, similar circumstances, excruciating stomach pains in the same family. And all the real cause of death, no, they're not all men, actually. We will get to this. Turns out to be poison. Eventually, after, I'm going to flip forward and then flip back. So basically, poison, post-mortems eventually get ordered. And the bodies, when they're dug up, they're all chock full of arsenic.
A classic.
Yes. So this is the famous case of the Sydney family poisoning. Dum, dum, dum. And it is a real doozy, you guys.
How did the arsenic get into them? That's what we want to know, yeah?
Yes, that is what we want to know, Fern.
So he wasn't painting or licking pencils or anything like that, was he?
No. I mean, somebody might try to argue that. But no, I'll give you a little bit more information. Between April 1928 and March 1929, three people from the same wealthy South Croydon family died in mysterious circumstances. I want to give you guys a caveat now. This is a really interesting and complex case with drama, intrigue, and many suspects, and it will genuinely be impossible to do it justice. I will do my best. And also, this case was suggested by my agent, Susie Genvey. So I just want to say a big shout out to Susie Genvey.
Hi, Susie Genvey.
Hi, Susie.
Hey.
And I'm sorry I'm butchering this case because I have to do it fast. So the Sydney family tree, this is the information part, because there's just slightly too many names that it's comfortable to try and memorise when we've all had a drink. So this is a very close-knit family. The mother, the matriarch, is called Violet. She's elderly. She is, I mean, whatever. She's divorced against her will, and she's very proper, very old-fashioned, very strict. Now, she has three large adult children.
Large?
Large? I just wanted to do that large adult sons thing. But two of them are girls, so they're not large adult sons. She's got three large adult children. She's got one large adult son.
So does that mean they're big?
No, it's just like what like the Trump children get called, you know, like my large adult sons that can't deal with their own lives. Have you guys heard the expression large adult sons?
Never. Trump.
No. Me neither.
Taylor, you're American. Does Trump call them his large children?
He doesn't call them that. Sorry, it's a diss. It's other people call them that.
No, I've never heard it. I feel so out of the loop.
They're really thick and terrible, and they're not proper adults, so they get called by large adult sons.
She's got kids that are grown up and they're dicks.
Yeah. She's got three children. She has Grace, who is married to the guy that's just died.
Ah, yes.
She has...
To Hilary Duff. Okay, I'm with you.
Yeah. She's got Tom, who is married to an American wife called Margaret.
Ew.
Now, Tom wants to be an actor in Hollywood.
Oh, shit.
And him and his wife are getting disheartened with Croydon life because they want all their gigs. Yeah. The gigs are local. They want to go to Hollywood and have a big ass life.
Croydon is the Hollywood of London.
I know.
They've got an Arndale Centre. Come on.
I mean, these people don't know they're born. But so that's their issues. And then Vera, who's 40, she's the oldest daughter of Violet. She is now, the source material says that she is a spinster by choice.
Ooh.
Or as we would
It's not her choice.
Hey.
Kisses to actually not prefer men.
Oh my God, Fran. Right. Literally, she is almost definitely gay. The way they describe, she's rich enough, she has evaded marriage on purpose, and she has close female friendships. She plays bridge, you guys. I don't want to stereotype. She goes on brisk walks, according to my source material.
Oh boy. You know what? If you go on brisk walks, you're a spinster, whether it's by choice or not. Nothing more unladylike.
They all live very close together. So Vera and Violet live together. She helps look after her mum. The other two are married, but they live on parallel streets. So they all live on Vera and Violet live on Birdhurst Rise. Tom and Grace separate, but they live very close by. So they see each other every day. They visit each other. They're very close geographically and apparently emotionally. Now, Violet's, the matriarch's ex-husband, Thomas Sidney, is a prominent barrister, and he abandoned Violet and the children when they were small.
Ugh.
And he ran off with his brother's sister-in-law. Because drama, you guys, I told you there was drama. Wow. So Violet, the matriarch, is very bitter. She absolutely
West Croydon hussy, right?
I mean, like, yeah.
And I don't know what that means.
So she hates that dude, but she's very close to her three kids.
Okay.
So, as we know, the first person dies, Edmund Duff. He was married to Violet's daughter, Grace. Now, the Violet very famously disliked her daughter, Grace's husband. Question, why do we think that was?
Ooh. So he's the one that died?
Yes. And ooh. Matriarch Violet hates
was him. He not good enough for her in like societal terms, like was he a working good. Class lad yeah. kind of thing?
That's a good guess. Any advance on that?
Well, a kind of neuro-riche. Was he a tin miner or something and picking up uh-huh. arsenic in the mines?
Interesting. Very good as well.
Oh, yeah. Did she marry for love?
You know what? I do not know what she married for, but you're all quite close. The main reason is that he was friends with the ex-husband.
Oh, her ex-husband.
Yes. And also, if you're looking for a good reason too, this dude is 17 years older than Grace.
Oh.
Wow. That's a crime, Hannah George.
Like I can talk. I was going to say, my fiancé is 15 years older than me. So.
I know. I have a 13-year age gap, but whatever. There's a power imbalance. It's not the same.
That doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't yeah,
make age differences. I used to, I had a Cornish friend who was like my mother, and she used to say to me, I'd rather be an old man's darling than a young man's fool.
Ooh.
Yes.
That's very good.
Wise words.
I like that.
It's good, isn't it?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with it unless it's like an underage situation.
I mean, the thing is, they did get married young in those days.
Is murder involved here? Is it actually murder? Can't yes. answer me that yet. Okay. So well, it looks like Violet went around killing these people and accidentally they all had it at a dinner party and everyone else drank the wine or whatever and they all killed each other.
Yeah. Buffet.
Hold that buffet. Thought. Hold that thought. That's basically, I'm going to try and whiz through some of this stuff because basically, yeah, Fern's onto it.
One of us has got to take this seriously, for heaven's sake.
They're not even writing anything down.
I know.
So the other thing is, this guy, he's friends with the guy, so he's a barrister, but he's a retired barrister. He's, as I can't remember which one of you said it now, but he is not as rich as them. They are living a much lower quality of life than the rest of the rich family.
Ah.
Also,
old man poor pants. I'm with you.
Mm. Old man poor pants.
Yes.
That's what I call my fiance. That's weird.
And also, he could be crude, argumentative, and he frittered away what money he had. What a catch. Mm. Also, it was said he drank too much beer.
But that was prescription for his acne. Like, that was just the doctor at the time.
It was medicinal beer.
And hang on, when you say argumentative, he was a barrister, wasn't he? So, hey, what did they expect?
Yeah, he's just doing his job.
Yeah.
Question, who is the next person to die?
out of the list of people I've given you.
Oh, I'm so jealous of Fern's like notes right now. I'm just like, oh shit, there was one called Johnny. There was a Nigel.
Okay, so this was Edmund who died, yes?
Yes.
Edmund died first.
Yeah.
Deadmond.
Because he yes. had, Deadmond, yes. Because he had less money than everyone else. And his wife, Grace, was the daughter of Violet, who didn't like the barrister husband, who was Edmund. Is that correct?
That is very good, yes.
Okay, I'm trying to look at that. I've kind of drawn a sort of Venn diagram. I don't know if you can see
I'm
this.
I'm impressed.
Thank you. Violet had large children. And,
and who dies next?
I think, it must be Tom, the son okay. who's an actor who wants to go to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Margaret. Ooh. But they okay. were finding Croydon too difficult.
I love that you've got everybody's names. This is just joyful.
I'm a journalist.
I'm wondering if...
Yeah, if you get this wrong, it'll be really embarrassing.
Yeah, well, journalists get things wrong all the time.
Yeah, they're like the real cops.
Yeah.
Katie, treat her like a magician and just tell her that she's right. No matter what. So I have this profile of Violet that she's very possessive and she's trying to kill off all of the in-laws, all okay. of her children-in-laws. So I'm going to go for Tom's wife, Grace.
The American wife is called Margaret.
Maggie the American. I think she bumps okay. off the. Of course you'd kill the Yankee. She probably meant to kill her first, but she was so hardy. She held on.
Was she, yeah. was she from Montana or something like that? Yeah, she'd be very nice and hardy up there, wouldn't she?
I'm imagining her there? With bangs.
She's yes. got big bangs.
Yes.
She got big old bangs.
I always remember the going to school when there was this girl at school that put so much hairspray in her fringe that it was like a letterbox, which always made me laugh. But that's by the by.
Oh, like when the wind would blow?
Yeah.
Oh, that was my entire fucking high school. It was amazing. Just how did we think that was okay to make it one solid thing?
I know.
No bang left behind.
I think in a little twist, I think it could be Violet who dies next.
Okay.
Because maybe if like what Fern says, it all happens on the same night at a barbecue stroke uh-huh. dinner party, she could have accidentally or deliberately killed herself. Maybe it was a kind of murder-suicide.
I Ooh. Tell you what, Hannah George, hold that thought. The other two, I'm sorry, you are not correct. The next person to die is Vera.
Oh no, I liked Vera.
Sorry, Fern,
I'm very disappointed in the way that you have drawn this story. You have led us up many black alleyways. And you have let me down and you've left all the girls down.
Oh no!
You have let the listeners down. And I want you to buck your ideas up.
Okay, you know what? I've got the commissioner up my ass, you guys. You've got to do better.
All right. Now, give okay. us something sensible. Yes. I'm writing down arsenic death. Yes,
okay.
Next.
So, I'm sorry to tell you, Vera, the very happily single gay lady, is the next one to die.
Oh. I was hoping it wasn't Vera.
Yeah, so months later, she starts to feel unwell. And as you know, she had a very active and happy life. She goes on brisk walks. She plays bridge. She's got no man tying her down. And at first, she just starts to feel tired all the time and she can't work out why. And it's very unlike her.
And then say, it's because you haven't got a good man.
I mean, God knows.
You'd be full of energy if you had the love of a good man, Vera. Yeah. God damn it.
You're hysterical, Vera. Yeah.
You need some babies in your uterus and you'll be fine.
Yes, you'll be
Get
fine.
Get on the hysteria cushion. Bounce on it a little bit.
Or let me do it for you. Those doctors knew what they were doing. Nowadays, nothing. That's what they used to do, wasn't it? Help the ladies.
No, they did. Yeah. They did. They invented vibrators because they were sick of doing it.
I love the idea of trying to get a vibrator on the NHS. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's actually a very good campaign we should start running with the Daily Mail.
Shit.
Vibrators for all.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
not a woman in the land would stop that. And men would be happy too. I heard a joke the other day. The difference between a clitoris and a golf ball, a man will spend 20 minutes looking for a golf ball.
Ooh, that is a burn on men.
So Edmund, Vera, yes, who's dead next?
I have to tell you the excruciating details of Vera's death. Just because it will provide clues, not because I want to dwell on it. She has bouts of nausea. By the 10th of February, she's too sick to leave the house.
But she's not having it. She's made of strong stuff. So she forces herself the next day to go for a walk and play bridge with her friends.
Oh, brisk walk.
I know. And then she gets home and now she has dinner with her mum, the matriarch, Violet. And this dinner is prepared by their housekeeper, one Kathleen Noakes. And they are having soup, vegetables, fish and potatoes and pudding. Both Vera and Violet eat everything the same except for one dish. The dish that they don't have the same is soup. So Violet doesn't have any soup, but Vera does. And also Mrs. Noakes, the housekeeper, has the soup and she gives some to Bingo the cat. So question, who gets sick?
The cat and Vera.
Yes, and Mrs. Noakes.
And Mrs. Noakes.
Yes. Oh. Yes. I just want to assure any cat fans of the podcast, the cat is fine.
Oh, wait, the cat's awesome. Definitely dead by now. Like.
3 days later, they have more soup. Grace, the widow of the Edmund Duff guy, comes to visit. She brings an Aunt Gwen. Grace leaves before they eat. The cook, Mrs. Noakes, makes the more soup with the same broth powder that she had used before.
Uh-oh.
And they have like veal potatoes, whatever. Now, Violet doesn't eat the soup again. Gwen and Vera do. Gwen and Vera are sick before the meal has even finished. They blame the soup. Mrs. Noakes can't understand it. There's nothing visibly wrong with the powder. And she's
Excuse me. Mrs. Yes. Noakes got ill, though, didn't she? But she survived.
Yes.
I feel like it's an outsider now. I thought this was in the family, and now I feel like it's an outsider with a vendetta who somehow had access to the kitchen and Mrs. Noakes.
It's right. Mm. It's so weird, honestly, because like one of the reasons that this case is famous is because they seemed so close and they were ripped apart by somebody who must have been one of them. Or was it somebody who wasn't one of them? Like, so Vera's got agonizing stomach pains again. The doctor gets called. What does he prescribe this time?
Is this the whiskey doctor?
This is the whiskey doctor. What does he prescribe for Vera?
Well, what do women get? If men get whiskey, women get like watered down bathtub gin. Laudanum.
Yes. No. Or kaolin and morphine, yeah?
She gets morphine.
Yes.
Morphine is correct. Yeah, he's moved on from whiskey. I don't know why. Then they call in a specialist and they diagnose her as having gastroenteritis influenza. They can't cure her. On the 15th of February, she dies. Question, what is the cause of death put down to on this occasion?
I guess maybe influenza, because that's what they thought when she came round. So
it's still put down to natural causes at this point.
Right.
Question, who dies next?
Oh my God. Oh my God. Well, you've already said it's not Bingo, so thank the Lord.
Yeah.
So it's not Mrs. Noakes or Auntie Wen?
No.
No, it's not them.
Is it Violet?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, that's a twist.
It's Matriarch Violet. Now, Violet is absolutely devastated by her daughter Vera's death. They were like best friends. Vera was secretly her favourite child.
Oh my God, I'm secretly my parents' favourite child.
And also, you know, she was going to look after her in her old age. They lived together. They had like quite a sweet setup. So now Tom, the son, married to the American, and Grace, the widow, did what they could to help their mother through this terrible time. They both visited her every day. And Dr. Elwell prescribed tonics to palliate Violet's grief. But on March...
Gin and tonics.
Wow. I mean, that would be better. On March the 5th, Violet was visited by Grace and Dr. Elwell. They had lunch. What happened next will amaze you.
Drunk women solving crime.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It was stomach pains again. So she starts to feel sick. And when Grace paid her another visit in the afternoon, she was surprised to see her mother looking pale and weak. Now, question, what does Violet now say has happened? The matriarch. Ooh. Violet.
Who's yes. Sick. Who's now ill. She doesn't know she's dying, but she's saying...
Or does she?
That bloody cat. Does she know she's dying, you think? She might do.
Well, yes. So she is now suspicious...
So she makes an accusation.
Yes,
perhaps.
She makes an accusation.
Against Maggie, the American.
She doesn't accuse a person, but she definitely
accuses. Yes, something to do with like the cutlery or the crockery or the...
Well, she 100% thinks she's being poisoned.
She says, I'm being poisoned.
Yes, she says, I'm being poisoned. She's suspicious. There's too much now. And she thinks that she's the next victim. And also this tonic that she's been given to make her feel better, she says that the last dose tasted odd.
Ooh. Yes. So we think it's the doctor.
Dr. Whiskey.
Now, he is going to be a suspect. So,
what's his name?
Dr. Elwell.
Dr. Elwell Shipman. I've heard of him.
So after Grace hears what Violet says, she summons Dr. Elwell and then they examine the bottle. Question, does he see anything unusual about the bottle? Yes is correct.
It's got a big label on it saying arsenic.
Yeah. It's like a skull and crossbones. It was really
Guys,
weird.
I can't apologize enough.
I've mixed these up.
When I first went to med school, there were 5-6 medicines top. But I tell you what, now
I can't keep up.
20, 30, can't keep up.
He saw a gritty sediment on the bottom.
I once had like a nice bottle of wine, like once, and it had sediment in the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was proper fancy, but not so much in medicine.
No, now somebody was trying to poison you, Hannah. But so he called the chemist who prepared the medicine, and the chemist said that the tonic had a small dose of strychnine, but in such minute quantities that it could not possibly do any harm. And he confirmed that there was nothing at all wrong in the tonic that could produce Violet's symptoms. So it must be that somebody has messed with it. Now, by the afternoon, Violet's illness was an alarming repeat of Vera's and Edmund's, vomiting, diarrhea, intense stomach cramps. What does Dr. Elwell suggest has happened?
He suggests that someone's poisoning somebody.
Oh, do you know what? Very close. Any other guesses from you guys? Or shall I reveal?
Well, yeah, I think that he thinks that somebody's maybe... poisoning the medicine. The medicine is their way in, I think.
Okay. Close but no donut, you guys. He suggests that it's food poisoning.
What kind of idiot is this doctor?
Yeah.
Who's he having an affair with?
Fern Britton. That is a fantastic question. And the answer is Grace.
Okay.
I was going to get to this, but you've got there already.
Yes. Now we're talking.
Okay.
Well done.
So, Violet dies that night.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's a given. That's fine. We can brush over that.
Okay. Question, what is the cause of death put down to this time? Does this also get put down to natural causes, or does it get
I think someone
suspicious?
Smells a rat at this point, don't
okay.
they?
Okay. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
Suicide.
Suicide, and then Taylor?
Unknown causes.
Okay, so correct. This gets put down to suspicious.
Suspicious.
Ooh. The cause of death is suspicious. So at this point now, Edmund and Vera's bodies get exhumed, and this is when all the corpses get thoroughly examined. And as you know, this reveals loads of arsenic poison. Now it turns into an investigation, and they determine that the vehicles for the arsenic meant that these three had been specifically targeted. Because Edmund must have ingested his through either whiskey on his fishing trip or beer at home. Vera was the only person who loved soup, although this feels a bit more dodgy because other people ate the soup and got sick, but she loved soup, apparently.
Imagine that being like the thing people remember about you. So, I loved Hannah. She was great. She loved soup. She bloody loved soup.
But also, like, maybe in 1928, that was fancy. Like, you couldn't get it in a tin. Soup was a big deal.
Signs you haven't lived life enough. She loves soup.
Let's all raise a glass of soup. Taylor, remember our friend. And then also Violet was the only one drinking her tonic. Looks dodgy, you gotta say. Now, so someone wanted these three dead and they knew how to do it, but who? So now I'm going to recap our list of suspects for everybody. So number one, Grace. Motivation to kill her husband. Although they seemed happily married, she was rumoured to have affairs, plural, and specifically this doctor.
Was he married or is he single?
He's single as far as I can tell.
Okay, that's cool.
Because he's young enough that a dude cannot have to get married.
He's not a spinster doctor.
Yeah, exactly, right? So also, she may have been sick of being poorer than the rest of her family and wanted the inheritance. But counter to that, Grace derived little financial benefit from the deaths of her mother and sister. She gained a small life insurance policy from Edmund's death. Fun fact, the police found weed killer at her house, which contains arsenic. And she's also the only person that could have done all three. Okay, so suspect number two, Tom.
Why is she the only person that could have done all three? Just because she was close enough that it's plausible?
She was kind of there for all three. Like, you
not
know,
looking
Violet,
good, Grace.
Maybe
not
you know,
looking
the,
good.
It's not. I mean, it's not looking good for Grace. So
is it
Tom,
too obvious, though? Yes.
But then, yes, is it too obvious?
Cause yeah, I mean, if this was Midsummer Murders, there's no way it would be Grace.
No. No.
So Tom, married to an American called Margaret, feeling restricted by Croydon life. He worked as an entertainer with disappointing local gigs, and he has a strong motive for wanting to inherit from his family and go to Hollywood and chase stardom. In theory, he has the most to gain, and the police found weed killer at his house too, which contained arsenic.
I wonder if there's just a lot of weeds in South Croydon. Let's not.
I mean, very avid gardeners, you guys.
Well, it's 1928. Like, there's arsenic everywhere.
Yeah.
Including people ingesting it voluntarily because they still think it's kind of like,
well, a little bit does you good in your tummy.
It's going to help my skin.
Well, they put strychnine in something else and the chemist said, oh, that's fine. There wasn't enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
But does it do it good?
That wasn't a lethal dose. That's fine.
Yeah.
I know. It's a crazy world.
Okay. Next.
So number three, Violet, the mother, was reported to have had a hysterical nervous breakdown when her husband abandoned her. And she had always hated Edmund Duff, who Grace met through the ex-husband. Now, there's a theory that she could have poisoned him and then Vera and then her and herself. Or did someone else do him? Did she just kill Edmund and then someone else killed her? You know, it could have been a split perpetrator. Or maybe she just couldn't live with herself after she'd done it. So that's in the mix. Number four, the housemaid Kathleen Noakes. Now, she had actually given her notice at the time of the murders and she was desperate to leave the house. Her reasons were that Violet was too old-fashioned and slave-driving as an employer. However, she loved Vera, but how much, you guys?
Oh!
There are hints. There are hints. And I cannot be sure. And
I don't believe that Noakes is a suspect.
No,
I'm not feeling that.
I'm not feeling the Noakes thing either.
It's a Noakes from me.
Although, if she was gonna, like, if she gets just a little bit sick, that really makes her look innocent. Like, if she was the killer, that's very clever. But she had no motive to poison Edmund. And even if she did have the, although she did have the means to poison Vera and Violet, she also got sick and she doesn't inherit any money. Like, she's not on the inheritance list.
Love is always more valuable than money. And I'm wondering whether she was in love with somebody and maybe expecting a child, Dr. Elwell, and they needed to kill people off. Dr. Elwell may have known that he was going to receive some money from the family, but meanwhile he was trying to kill them all because he was having affairs with all of them.
Ooh.
Yes.
See, that's good. That's good.
But someone was pregnant here. Definitely.
Was it Bingo?
Yes. She had Dr. Elwell's litter.
Oh, just tiny little kittens and stuff.
Tiny
kittens.
Yes. Adorable. Yes. They became very good obstetricians.
And it's honestly, I can't wait for Pixar to make the movie.
No.
Okay, number five, Dr. Elwell.
Okay.
Having an affair with Grace, because drama. Now, Elwell admitted to police that he and Mrs. Duff, i.e. Grace, had been indiscreet, quote unquote.
She was up the Duff.
That could,
oh, she
could,
was a pregnant
it
one.
Could, it could mean that.
And indiscreet means non-missionary, so like She took it from behind once.
Ooh. Like they got seen holding hands or something.
Well, getting out of all those corsets and skirts, you know.
Yeah.
What's the quickest way?
Oh my God. Did I just saw this on Twitter. Is this true? That the Spanish flu pandemic, after that, that was when corsets were gone. Because everyone had to isolate at home and they were sick of corsets and then they wouldn't wear them when they came back. And then people are saying, we're not going to wear bras when we come back now.
Oh, yes.
Wow. Where's Fern going to keep all her stuff if she's not wearing a bra?
Yes, but I literally haven't worn a bra for about 2 months. I mean, it's terrifying, but I can't be asked.
Why would you?
There's no point. There's no point.
The great COVID breast liberation.
Yeah.
That's the other thing we should start.
Yes.
I can't remember what the one was at the beginning, but let's do this as well.
Vibrators, okay. The Daily Mail.
Yeah. Vibrators, Daily Mail, vibrators.
Seriously, you guys, the Daily Mail is the last people. They hate women having fun with sex.
Yes. Yeah, fuck yourself like we fuck the country. That's essentially
that's
what.
That's their motto, right? So now, after Edmund died, some people expected that the doctor would marry Grace. And if this is true, the doctor could have a motive to want Edmund out of the picture, but what reason would he have to kill the other two, Violet and Vera? Suspect number six, no one. Now, in her book, Diane James, this book is called Poisonous Lies, she argued that the arsenic found in the victims could have come from perfectly innocent environmental sources. As we've all said, everyone's chucking back the arsenic. Now, Edmund and Vera could truly have died of natural causes, just as the doctors originally believed. And Violet, unable to deal with the grief of her daughter's untimely death, committed suicide. We've touched on that as well. So you guys can now vote. Who do you think it was?
The doctor and Grace are in cahoots, and it's a plan that just took off. And I agree with Fern. I think there might be a pregnancy. Yeah, I'm gonna go with that.
I think Kathleen has something to do with this. I don't know why, but I think Kathleen and Dr. Elwell were really in on it and trying to kill the whole family off because Kathleen knew where the silver was kept.
Okay, nice. Okay.
Love it.
That's a good theory.
It's not true though, is it?
No, it's exciting. No, it's exciting. We will get to this.
Unless Grace and Kathleen were lovers.
Oh, I like a big conspiracy.
This could just be like a whole banging session that's got out of hand.
Is there any other kind?
It has never been my pleasure to know, sadly.
I know, I was just thinking, like, mine have all been pretty in hand. They're usually my hands.
Okay, so I think it might be the doctor. I've got Shipman on the brain and I'm thinking that it could be a doctor because I think within society, particularly then, you wouldn't suspect them. So if he's got, I don't know, particularly if he's, you know, he's into Grace, well, he's having an affair with Grace.
Yeah.
I feel like he'll just, anything in his way, he'll just be like, all of his, like the things he said so far, like, have felt a bit hokey, like, I know, like, whiskey and stuff, but, like,
yeah.
It is, like, what, 1920 something?
Because remedies are all liquids.
They've got inoculations by now.
It's suddenly come to me, the person you've hardly mentioned, in fact, you did it in just one sentence, was, she says, returning to her notebook of 75 pages.
Thank fuck for that.
That Violet was, she had the barrister husband, and he left her.
Yes.
All the way back.
All the way back. And so, is he involved? Is the barrister husband of Violet, who left her with three children, large? Mm-hmm. he managed to kill most of them off. Perhaps it's something to do with Violet's ex-husband.
That's really interesting.
That's a good guess, actually. Because no one else has said that. That's a very good... question, is anyone convicted?
There's too many what ifs and you have to have no doubt, don't you, if it's in a jury, and there's so much doubt along all of them. Yeah.
Okay.
This feels like a cold case. Just the way you've delivered it, I feel like there's not a conclusion, which is really frustrating.
Correct. Now, it's in everything that you guys have said is kind of still also spot on because Grace, being a high class lady, outranks a doctor in 1928.
No way. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah. Doctors weren't respected until like rich people got poor. The police thought it was Grace. But okay. She was so posh and they did not have enough evidence and they couldn't go after her unless they had enough evidence because she was such a high rank.
She was a lady.
She was a lady as well. Yes. And you cannot talk to a lady. So basically, like because this is a really famous case in Croydon, but also beyond Croydon. So there's books, there's articles, there's shitloads of stuff. Everyone basically predominantly favours Grace as the most likely suspect. She was vivacious. She was beautiful. She died in 1973.
Whoa.
Wow.
And there's correspondence with the Metropolitan Police that says that Edmund Duff's wife was the main suspect. And there's a letter written in 1993 that states Edmund Duff's wife was and still is strongly suspected of being responsible for all three deaths. Another family member who survived one of the poisonings and who had thought that the inquest insisted other people were responsible for the murders said it at the end of the inquest. They also believed that Edmund Duff's wife was the murderer. The sample letter continues stating that although the circumstantial evidence was strong against Edmund Duff's wife, it was not considered then by the Director of Public Prosecutions to have been strong enough to have brought about a charge. Because basically, don't go after a rich person unless you can kill them, because otherwise you're going to get buried.
Wow. Hi. There's so many reasons I want to be rich, but there's...
We have lots of avenues and no answers. And as Tom Sidney's wife, Margaret, said, the American, who can say who did it?
Is that what she said?
What a great who can say what a great actor.
It? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who can say who did it?
I love it. All Vera could say is, I like soup. So, like, that's quite astute, what she said.
So, the Croydon poisonings inspired one of Agatha Christie's most acclaimed novels, Ordeal by Innocence.
Oh!
And it all happened at 29 Birdhurst Rise, Croydon, England, but that house has since been torn down and is now flats. Cheers!
Yay!
Cheers, guys!
So we worked hard for nothing, really, didn't we? The real perpetrator is Katie, who set all that up for us and left us not knowing anything.
I'm sorry that there wasn't proper closure.
I mean, I've set up an incident room here. I have bits of white tape, pins to photographs. I've got a map of Croydon, 29 Birdhurst close. I've got the whole lot. What am I going to do with it now?
No. Now it looks like you did it, Fern.
I'm just thinking of your daughters coming back and you've got these notes like arsenic, dead man, large children.
Right. You have really disappointed me, Katie.
Oh, shit, not again.
Imagine someone saying that to you when you're not a magician. This is awful.
Also, it's really good for me because this is what it must feel like for my children all day.
I've taught my children all the swear words, everything. And
my
youngest one, who's now 18, she said, do you remember that time I went to school, Mum? And I said to my friends, my mum says it's better to say cunt than douche.
Yes! God, that's amazing.
I said, did I say that? She said, yes, you did. I said, well, I was right. I'm right. Absolutely right.
I mean, like, yeah, I stand by it. Come on, yeah, teachers.
I love that. That sounds like me.
I don't want to suggest the title of your next book, but that.
Drunk Women Solving Crime.
On that note, I will move on to the last portion of the podcast. And now this is a listener crime. Somebody has written into us. Actually, do you know what? This circles back to some of the stuff we've said. I will read this to you guys.
I'm just going to open up my envelope and do it on the inside now.
Like a true detective.
This is the best detective we've ever had. Right. All those other detectives were chances.
First listeners, crime. Yep. Yes.
Hang on, Sarge. I ran out of forearm. I got it right on my shin.
Yeah. On my inside of my lip.
Now, this is from Anita. Hello, lovely ladies. Thank you very much. We are lovely.
Correct.
And now she says, I'm not sure whether you still want listener crimes, but here goes. Just for the record, yes, we do, Anita. And everybody listening, we still do need listener crimes. Please give us lots more listener crimes. Thank you very much. But it was sweet that you checked. So I don't know if you need listener crimes, but here goes. About 8 years ago, I arrived home a day earlier than my family from a great week away. I opened up my front door to find a note from the police saying we had been burgled.
Oh.
I went into my house and saw they had smashed one of the glass doors at the back of the house. At the time, we had a hamster. Having got over the shock of being burgled, I then discovered that the hamster was dead. It had got too cold as the door was open and it was October. This is a brutal, brutal story so far. Going upstairs, they had thankfully left my daughter's rooms alone, but had tipped out all the stuff in our bedroom onto the bed. Apart from one thing, which they had helpfully left on my bedside table, my vibrator standing proud.
Wow.
It was a source of great amusement to the police officers when they came back. Needless to say, I disposed of the item before my husband and girls arrived home the next day.
Wow.
That is the end of her email.
So we have to work out who would have done this.
I'm going to go back on what we just said. These guys were douchebags. Who sticks a vibrator up in the air like, meh, 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 meh. That's really, that irks me. And they killed a hamster.
Oh, yeah, they're 100% men. Could you imagine women finding a vibrator and being like, oh my God.
There is a perpetrator. There definitely is a perpetrator.
There's definitely a perpetrator. Probably plural.
Ah, someone who was very jealous of Anita.
Ooh. For the happy family home she had.
And the pleasure she was having.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Anita's got it all.
Yeah, she's having an active life.
She's got a hamster. She's got sex with a dildo.
She gets to leave family holiday a day early, which is fucking genius.
She's living her best life.
That journey home on her own, listening to the radio.
She can listen to anything she wants. There's no kids pulling each other's hair.
She doesn't need a vibrator.
I'm coming just talking about it.
She's going home for the vibrator. But also, the children aren't going, don't sing, mummy. You know, all that when you really want to sing in the car.
Yes.
Yeah, or is that just me? But yeah.
Don't sing, mummy.
It was us. We're so jealous.
Yes.
My daughter has just started doing that, like, don't sing. She's only six, and I thought it would happen much later, and it really hurts because she sings all day, and she improvises songs and does this nasally thing. She's like, oh, yeah, baby, yeah. And I just want to be like, you suck. I have a better voice. I deserve to sing, and I can't say anything.
I feel like the perps are male because they're, like, middle grade laughing at dildos.
Yeah. And also, I mean, but I think they're probably professionals in the sense that they're like, right, the kids' bedrooms have got shit. Like, you need to go to the parents' bedrooms. Like,
okay, they were quick in and out.
Yeah, I think they sound like sort of maybe professional robbers who, you know, like there's the Wet Bandits in Home Alone.
Is this the training for our detectives? Yeah.
But they're called the Wet Bandits, aren't they? So they have a calling card, and maybe
flooding their calling card is putting the dildos on the bedside table.
Oh well, yeah. Possibly. But why did they target Anita's bedroom?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, we don't know what was taken, so they might have taken jewelry, or we only know about the hamster and the dildo.
And I guess
but they are misogynists, because only a misogynist would feel the need to. As we know, it's not that easy to balance a dildo, no matter what the size. Sorry. She said vibrator, not dildo, and we know there's a difference. We don't know if it was silicone. Different materials.
Different horses, different courses.
Exactly. But it is not easy to balance it up like that. Yeah. Like, that was a very deliberate, we're in a hurry, but I have time to say that you are a woman and I hate what you're doing here.
Anita is being faithful to her husband, is she?
Yes, apart from with this dildo, as far as we know.
Okay. Was the husband being faithful to her? Do we know?
We don't know.
No.
These are good questions to ask, though. Yes.
What if she left holiday a day early for a dalliance?
Maybe they have an open relationship.
Well, maybe. Or maybe it was next door's, I don't know, adolescent son who had a bit of a thing about her and wanted to go and have a look in her bedroom.
That actually could check out.
Or maybe hamster.
No. I mean, his little hands just trying to.
he got rattled to death and then crept downstairs and then was rigid from the cold.
Oh my God, the hamster had one hell of a ride before he died.
He did. Bless him.
I love the fact fact that as well, like, the what do the police put a note through your door, like from Royal Mail, saying, we're sorry we miss you, you've been burgled.
Yeah,
the back door is still open because your hamster is so cold.
Yes, like, and they would have boarded it up, you know, the police would have boarded that up, definitely, because they do. So it must have been a very recent...
Before they got to the boarding.
I always remember my mum getting up when we were kids. She got a phone call from the police saying, someone's broken into your car. And then we went and checked and it was just the state of the car. No one had broken
it. Oh my God.
It never had a radio, so it had all the wires. And they're like, someone's nicked your radio. And my mum's like, yeah.
That's how we live.
Accidentally wasting police time with her own shitty car.
That's amazing.
Taylor's had a thought. What?
I think I've solved it.
Okay.
And it's much more benign than we ever expected.
Bring us home, Taylor.
It's not professional robbers at all. Because if they were, I feel like she would say more than just the hamster and the dildo if, like, they'd stolen thousands of da-da-da. So here we go. She hired, like, a local teenager to feed the hamster while they were gone. The teenager was, like, a pothead, forgot to do the job, came, found the hamster dead because he had neglected to feed the hamster and thought, I better make it look like there was a burglary, smash the window, and then thought, as blackmail, I'm going to put this vibrator I found on her desk so that she's so ashamed she will look no further into it. It is teenager Ted.
Oh my, that is
I don't
great.
Know why, but I wrote it down. Teenager Ted.
We've never solved one before.
Well, yes, all right. We have, Hannah. Come on.
Okay, this is the second one we've ever solved. So, Anita, I'm very sorry. You need to take this up with Ted. We solved that. Now we have just enough time to ask Fern Bridden, what are you up to? Is there anything you want to plug? For any more books, where can we find you?
Bless you, bless you, bless you. Yes, so June the 11th, new book, yes. Daughters of Cornwall is out. I am at the moment reading the audiobook, so that's exciting.
Nice.
Recording that all day today. And so it'll be on audio and ebook and hardback. And that's June the 11th. Did I mention June the 11th? June the 11th.
June the 11th.
Daughters
June the 11th.
Of Cornwall.
Amazing.
Right?
Write that
that's
down.
Good.
Write that down.
And then I'm starting to write the new one, which will be for 2021.
Okay.
And that's going to be an absolute blockbuster and be a musical and a film and everything.
Cunts, not douches. Yep.
Yes. And my sweet peas are growing really well because I started them in October, so I'm well ahead of the game with those.
Oh, wow.
And I'm cycling Land's End to John O'Groats September 21. How's that?
Wow.
Oh, that's God, this is amazing. This is amazing. What's the book? Daughters of Cornwall.
Daughters of Cornwall, June the 11th, yes.
June the 11th, Daughters of Cornwall.
Oh, Fern, you're living my best life.
Oh, bless
the
you.
The book in 2021, is that a sequel or is that another standalone book?
That is going to be a standalone and it's a true story that I think of as enormous interest. And everyone I've ever said it to goes, that's really of enormous interest.
Yeah.
I say, yeah. And then they pick up their drink and leave. But but it is. It's going to be good. I'm very excited about it. Put it that way.
That's very cool.
Okay. Daughters of Cornwall is the next way we can hear what
yes,
you're
yes, that's based on my family. My grandmother, I discovered in my 20s, because this man wrote to me. He was the son that she had abandoned. And she had to give him away. And then go on to have another family. And so it's about that. Yes, I know, it's really good. Really good.
Oh my God, this is amazing. Okay. So Daughters of Cornwall, June 11th. This sounds incredible.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. So I'm excited about that. And in the meantime, I'm just doing like the rest of us, just sitting on my ass and enjoying this order that I have. And I think most of us have been given to stay put.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. You know, and that in some ways is frustrating because I'd much rather be helping somehow. But if this is helping, I'm enjoying it.
Yes. Aww, and thank you for spending some of that staying put time with us. This has been so much fun. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Taylor. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also, if you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acas and thank you for listening. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.